Informed Dissent, the intersection of healthcare and politics, with Dr. Jeff Barkey, board-certified primary care physician, and Dr. Mark McDonald, board-certified child, adolescent, and adult psychiatrist.
Well, welcome, Mark. Great to be with you again for another exciting episode of Informed Dissent. We can be found at informeddissentmedia.com and on most podcast channels, including Spotify. We've got a phenomenal guest tonight that I think will be great, and that's Dr. Aaron Cariotti. All right, I'll get that eventually. And Aaron is a psychiatrist, associate professor, Department of Psychiatry and Human Behavior at the University of California, Irvine School of Medicine, my medical school alma mater, and where I did my training for a residency as well. And he is also the director of medical ethics program at UCI Health. Pretty interesting. I first found out about you, Aaron, when you wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal. This was, I don't know, a few months back, where you said, basically, the university vaccine mandate violates medical ethics. That was the title of it. And I'm quoting from the article, "Schools have for decades required vaccinations against infectious disease, but these mandates are unprecedented and unethical. Never before have colleges insisted that students or employees receive an experimental vaccine as a condition of attendance or employment." Wow. So bring us up to date, Aaron. What's going on, and where are you now?
So since that article, one of the vaccines has received full approval, the Pfizer vaccine. But I think the arguments in that piece that you mentioned, Jeff, still hold up for a couple of reasons. One is the vaccine rollout was very rapid, and we know that the clinical trials for the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines and the other COVID vaccines were truncated. They were shortened to about a three-month period, which is, to use the same term, unprecedented in the history of vaccine approval. So all we have for these vaccines is very short-term data. And once that short three-month trial period was over, the placebo arm of the trial was basically done away with, was destroyed, because everyone in the study was offered the vaccine. So we have no comparison group after the initial trial. We don't have the kind of rigorous safety monitoring that you would find in a clinical trial any longer. We have a passive surveillance system that requires that people self-report, that requires that if they see an adverse effect, they connect it to the possibility that this may have been related to the COVID vaccine. And the busy doctor takes the 30 minutes out of his or her day to submit the report to the VAERS system, which subsequently requires then that the CDC investigate those cases to see if there's an actual connection to the vaccine. And so that system has a lot of holes in it, and it doesn't function with the same level of rigor that we would have if we were monitoring safety and efficacy of vaccines during a clinical trial. So when I wrote that article, I was concerned that college students were going to be used essentially as guinea pigs for a drug that had not received full authorization yet. And even though the Pfizer vaccine has received full authorization, I think the duration of the clinical trial, the fact that the VAERS system, which is set up to report potential adverse effects, has sent up a lot of warning signals, only one of which has really been rigorously followed up on by the CDC. That's the issue of myocarditis. And that one issue that was followed up on, the CDC did confirm that there were a rare but significant number of cases of inflammation of the heart, that incidence of that increased with younger ages, and especially in young men. There have been several other potential adverse effects reported to the VAERS system that require rigorous follow-up and rigorous monitoring. A lot of folks have expressed concerns about the menstrual irregularities that have appeared in the wake of the vaccine rollout. And actually, the NIH has set aside, I think it was $1.5 million in grant funding to examine that issue of menstrual irregularities and see if there are potential problems related to menstruation or fertility. And given the fact that those studies haven't been done yet, the long-term adverse consequences of these vaccines still remain unknown. We just don't have very much data. We have no long-term data. It would be impossible to obtain long-term data because the vaccines are so new. And I think in light of all of those factors, the precautionary principle would tell us to make the vaccine available initially, perhaps to the people who are most vulnerable to bad outcomes from COVID, so the aged, people with co-occurring conditions. But this idea of mandating it, of requiring that people subject themselves to the known and unknown short-term and long-term risks of this vaccine, and particularly populations that are at very low risk of having bad outcomes from COVID, that risk-benefit calculus just didn't make sense to me at all from the beginning of the vaccine rollout. And it's making even less sense now as these mandates are sort of taking hold across the country. It's a particularly acute issue in my home state here of California, because the governor's announced a vaccine mandate for children age 5 to 11 as soon as the FDA approves the medication for that age group. But of course, the vaccine mandates have become a serious concern for private employers, for the military, with President Biden's announcement that any federally contracted employer with over 100 employees is going to be subject to these mandates. This issue has really come to a head and become a very serious concern for a lot of Americans over the last month or so.
Now, it's one thing to speak or write about this. It's another thing when it affects you personally. Tell us a little bit about that.
So in response to this, I have filed a lawsuit against my own employer, the University of California. And as it turns out, I'm actually subjected to two mandates. One is from the University of California as a faculty member, and the second is from the state of California, the California Department of Public Health, as a healthcare provider. Now, I'm not opposed to the vaccines as such. I am on the Orange County Vaccine Task Force. I helped devise the University of California's initial vaccine allocation policy when supplies were short. You know, we had to decide which among our healthcare providers or other workers got the vaccine first. So I've been involved in vaccine policy from the outset of the availability of these vaccines. And I think the vaccines have clinical utility for individuals that are at high risk of outcome from coronavirus infection, particularly for aged individuals. But I was concerned about the kind of one-size-fits-all vaccine policies, and particularly the vaccine mandates that did not respect the right of informed consent and informed refusal. And within that group of folks, I was particularly concerned about individuals who have already recovered from COVID-19, including myself. I had COVID last year. My whole family had COVID last year. And the scientific evidence on what we call natural immunity, the immunity that our immune system creates in response to being infected with SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID. We now know that the immunity that I have as a COVID-recovered individual is not only equivalent to, but it's actually superior to the immunity conferred by the vaccines. That's not to denigrate the usefulness of the vaccines, but only to highlight the importance of natural immunity when we're thinking about our pandemic response, when we're thinking about herd immunity and about the fact that this virus is going to become endemic. And if you look at the scientific research on this question, I am the safest person to be around. I have the most robust immunity. My immunity lasts longer than the immunity conferred by the vaccines, which is declining with time and with new variants. Whereas natural immunity, which we've been observing from the beginning of the pandemic, is showing no signs of waning over time. And yet, the University of California and the state of California's policies in this regard are discriminatory. I, who have natural immunity, am not allowed to go back on campus to supervise patients in my resident clinic, to teach medical students and residents, to do my usual clinical duties, including run the ethics committee and the ethics consult service. And yet someone who's vaccinated, let's say with a Johnson & Johnson vaccine, is allowed to go back on campus. And if you look at natural immunity, the study suggests that my immunity is somewhere between 95 and 99% effective. And again, not declining over time. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine, based on their own data submitted to the FDA, is 67% effective against infection. So it didn't make any sense to me that I'm excluded from campus having superior immunity, and someone who's fully vaccinated with Johnson & Johnson or with Pfizer or Moderna, one of the mRNA vaccines, is allowed to come back on campus. So I filed these lawsuits making a constitutional claim under the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, saying that my equal protection rights are being violated. That claim is now in federal court. At the district court level, we are moving to the so-called discovery phase of the trial, where we'll go into depositions and testifying at trial. And I think on the strength of the empirical evidence, on the strength of what we're seeing now, what we know now about natural immunity, my case should hopefully prevail in federal court, and I'm hoping we'll set up precedent that will apply not just to the University of California or even to the state of California, but to all Americans who are subject to these mandates.
Aaron, it sounds like you have an exceptionally strong case from a scientific objective vantage point. And as we all know, regardless of the strength of the evidence, employers and government are just consistently rejecting that claim, which is why we hope that the courts will express some rationality. But it's not just a legal battle for you. It's also a battle on a very personal level. I understand that you've been banned from going to the campus. You've been banned from essentially earning an income. You were suspended without, suspended while being paid, but according to your own declarations, public declarations, most of your pay comes from a clinic that you can't actually work in right now. So how is this affecting you on a personal, professional level, given the pressure that you're under? Do you get support from anyone at work? Are you on your own? What's it like for you as a human?
Yeah, that's right, Mark. So what's happened to me in the wake of this case is that, well, first of all, the university placed me on what they called paid leave. But as you mentioned, about half of my pay comes from clinical revenues that are generated from seeing patients or supervising resident clinics or being on call on the weekends and holidays. And initially, when I was not allowed to see my own patients that first week, my patients pushed back strongly. They contacted my department, contacted the university, and said, this is an unfair form of abandonment. And the university relented on that point. I'm now allowed to see my patients from home via telemedicine. We all know that telemedicine is not the same as seeing a patient in person, especially for a psychiatrist with doing psychotherapy, where subtleties of communication are very important. But nevertheless, I'm at least relieved that my patients will be able to see me over Zoom, this month. But I'm still not able to do those other clinical activities that generate a considerable portion of my salary. And a couple of days ago, I received another letter from the university saying that if I'm not vaccinated in the next 5 business days, and I think that expires this Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken, then I'm going to be placed on entirely unpaid suspension. So this is obviously clearly impacting my family, clearly impacting my ability to support them, my wife and 5 children, for whom I'm mostly the sole breadwinner in the family. So I'm now, at the same time that I'm trying to continue with this case, which I think is important and which I do not want to back away from, I am also scrambling in the last week or two to figure out, how to put food on the table. So I'm looking into either starting a private practice or joining a private practice so I can continue seeing my patients and continue earning an income. And I've started writing on my Substack blog, which has gained a few subscribers, and that's generating some modest income that can hopefully help hold us over during this difficult time. And in terms of support, I have to say, a lot of folks from within the University of California, from outside of the university, from outside of the state of California, have written to me in the last month thanking me for doing what I'm doing. And that is very edifying. It's very encouraging. I don't think I would persevere without that encouragement from so many people, most of whom are complete strangers to me, who I've never met before. I have so many emails in my inbox that I, truth be told, I haven't had time to read them all yet. I will eventually. But many, many folks talking about how they are in a similar situation, being subjected to unjust mandates that in their case are medically unnecessary, and they can't get an appropriate medical exemption. Maybe their appropriate religious exemption is denied, or they have natural immunity. And yet they are facing the same threat of losing their job. And I'm doing this not only on my own behalf, but I'm doing it on behalf of all the Americans that are being fired, fellow nurses and other healthcare professionals at UCI Hospital, my own institution, who last year, you know, during the pandemic, worked heroically on the front lines, providing care for COVID patients, maybe acquiring the infection in the course of providing that care, recovering, now with natural immunity, now armed with knowledge that the vaccines are not really going to help them. There's several studies that suggest that for COVID-recovered individuals, the adverse effects of the vaccine are elevated, right? So we're at increased risk of side effects from the vaccine. There's no measurable benefit from the vaccines based on our current literature, the current studies we have on this question. These folks are making entirely reasonable medical decisions on their own behalf, and they're being punished severely for it, not just with a fine or with social stigma, but with the loss of their ability to work, to put food on the table. And I just felt that, you know, I was aware going into this lawsuit that it would very likely cost me a lot professionally and reputationally, perhaps among some, you know, some folks out there that didn't understand why I was doing or what I was doing or why I was doing it. But I felt, looking at my colleagues who were being treated unjustly, I felt that as a medical ethicist, I couldn't in good conscience stand up in front of the medical students next year when I treat, when I teach rather their required ethics course and talk about issues like integrity and moral courage and doing what is, what you believe is right, even under pressure. I couldn't meaningfully have those conversations with students if I stood by in the middle of watching something unfolding that I thought was unjust and unethical and not stand up and try to do something. So, you know, in conversation with my wife and carefully, hopefully carefully considering the consequences, I decided to move forward with this, regardless of what happened. And to be honest, you know, if I have to leave the university, I'll be sad. I've spent my entire professional career at the University of California. I did my residency training there. I had such a good experience in residency, had great mentors among the attendings that I decided to join the faculty immediately after graduating. And I've been on faculty for the 14 plus years since then. And I've had a great academic career there at the university. So I have colleagues that I'm going to miss very much. I'm certainly going to miss teaching the medical students and supervising the residents, and running the ethics program, engaging with ethics consultations in our hospital. But again, I felt that this was an issue where, you know, if I didn't sort of put a stake in the ground and attempt to do something about it, I just wasn't going to wake up in the morning with a clear conscience. And even though I have financial stress now and I have, you know, uncertainty about my professional future, I do wake up with a clear conscience. And I am confident that I'm pursuing the right path. And, you know, it's hard to put a price on that in the end.
Where can we go to support you? Where can we find out how we can make a donation to your cause, to learn more about your case, to read your writings, etc.?
Thank you for that question, Jeff. The first place to go is my Substack newsletter. So you can Google Aaron Cariotti, funny spelling, K-H as in Henry, E-R-I-A-T-Y. Aaron Cariotti Substack. You do a search for that, you'll find my newsletter. Or you can go to aaroncariotti.substack.com. You can sign up. There's a free version with some of the content. There's a subscriber version. I think the price is $6 a month. That can help support me at that time if you want to become a paid subscriber. I'm posting information there on my lawsuit, updates on that particular case. I'm also posting summaries of scientific studies and other relevant information on natural immunity and on the COVID vaccines. So I'm hoping that that is also a very helpful source of information for other people that are dealing with vaccine mandates and wondering, you know, what they can do for themselves or their children if they're subjected to mandates and they have reasons, legitimate reasons not to comply with those mandates. The other way that folks can support my work, especially work on vaccine mandates and on COVID pandemic related issues, is to support the Zephyr Institute, Z-E-P-H-Y-R. If you go to the Zephyr Institute website and go to the donation page, you can click on the PayPal link there and you can donate to my specific program there. I'm the senior fellow and director of the Health and Human Flourishing Program. So if you just go to the pull-down menu there, click on Health and Human Flourishing. If you contribute there, that helps to support me and my work at the Zephyr Institute. And so those are both ways that people can both contribute to my efforts, but also get updates on the issues that we've talked about in this podcast.
You know, it's a bit ironic that here you are at an academic institution and the director of medical ethics of all things, and you're being treated pretty unethically and unscientifically. And it's just crazy. I know you never sought out to be a leader in this fight for freedom, if you will, medical freedom, against medical apartheid, really. How does it feel now that you really are a courageous warrior in this fight for, against medical tyranny?
Well, my head has been spinning the last few weeks. It's a bit disorienting when people are looking to you for a fight that they deeply believe in. It's edifying. It's certainly encouraging. But it can also be, as you might imagine, it can be a little bit intimidating to become a kind of symbol for, you know, a particular cause. On the other hand, this is a cause that I deeply believe in. And I filed these lawsuits, again, not just to protect myself. I may have found other ways that I could have protected myself, but I chose this path because I thought it could help not only me and my family, but could help other people. So at the same time, when other people are saying, I'm encouraged by what you're doing, thank you for what you're doing, that helps to encourage me as well. And at the end of the day, I'm a person of faith. I consider that all my fortitude is on loan from God. So I'm trying to rely on that. I'm trying to rely on my family, my friends. And I should mention, people from the university have also reached out to me and really encouraged me in this. So my colleagues as well, who I have great respect for, I bear no ill will toward anyone at the university. Not my colleagues, not the administrators, not even the people making these decisions that I disagree with. Again, at the end of the day, I believe that we have to try to do what we believe is right in this life. We have to be humble enough to to acknowledge new information and maybe change our minds. And I'm certainly open to having my mind changed on this issue. But as I continue to monitor the research coming out, this issue of natural immunity, I think, is only being strengthened. I noticed just today an article published in the Washington Post from a major public health figure at Johns Hopkins advocating for natural immunity and talking about, you know, the problems with the CDC kind of dragging its feet in not acknowledging natural immunity. So this is really becoming an unavoidable part of the mainstream conversation now that is really impossible to ignore. And there are financial forces at work, there are political forces at work that may be influencing these decisions. I'm fully aware of those issues, but I hope that with enough voices trying to be reasonable, trying to, again, draw our attention back to the evidence, back to the information that we have at hand, that in the end, the truth will prevail. If I didn't believe that, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing.
Wow. Well, that's quite a story. And God bless you for your courage. Mark and I have had the opportunity to talk to other courageous patriots that have literally put it all on the line, meaning not just talk about it, not just in theory, but their own livelihood is affected. I have a nurse in my practice. Her name is Stephanie. Yeah. And she put it all on the line. She was a 17-year veteran at Kaiser. And for a variety of reasons, she did not want the vaccine. And she didn't want to participate in the testing of an asymptomatic person. Mm-hmm. And she lost her job. She's a single mom. And she trusted that doing the right thing ultimately would prevail and that she must stand on principle to show her son and others that this is not just a game. These are principles of life and courage to show others that she was not going to give in. Now, it was Kaiser's loss and my gain that she and I connected, and I was looking for a nurse, and now we're lucky and blessed to have her. But it's people like you and like her and plenty of others that are risking everything. And I admire you all for doing that. And I think if enough people stand up and say no and push back and use science and common sense, not politics, to make decisions, then I think this may actually get better. You can't fire 30% of your workforce at a hospital,
right?
Nurses and technicians. You can't have thousands of military members that are otherwise healthy people go out of capability. You can't take 100 Navy SEALs with hundreds of thousands of dollars to train them and say you're not deployable, even though you're likely the healthiest human beings on planet Earth.
Yeah.
And it's just not making any sense from a scientific standpoint, from a common sense or healthcare standpoint, and hopefully these principles of freedom will ultimately prevail.
I agree, Jeff. I think that ultimately that's...
I know a really good psychiatrist if you need to talk to one.
Thank you. I mean, I may reach out to you on that. Yeah. Well, look, it's people like Stephanie.
I don't do telepsychiatry.
Yeah. It's people like Stephanie that you just, whose story you just described, they're the ones who inspired me to do this. So thank her on my behalf. I hope I meet her someday. And you're right. I mean, the court cases are important, but more important, we have to win in the court of public opinion. And what convinces people more than words, more than, you know, attempts at rational persuasion, as important as all that is the witness of someone's life, right? Someone standing by their convictions when it costs them something. So it's nurses like Stephanie that inspired me to take a stand as well.
Well, listen, Dr. Cariotti, thank you so much for your time, and give our best to your family and your children. You know, you hear people say to military families, thank you for your, you know, for your support. Thank you for your service. And the reality is it's your wife and your family that is participating in this and part of this fight. So thank them on our behalf. God bless you. And thanks for coming on Informed Dissent.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Informed Dissent with Dr. Jeff Barkey, board-certified primary care physician, and Dr. Mark McDonald, board-certified child, adolescent, and adult psychiatrist. Informed Dissent, the intersection of healthcare and politics.